This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Front Row on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Sharmila Ganesan. It is World Micro, Small and Medium-Sized Enterprises Day, and so today we are going to be looking at the art gallery, not from the creative perspective, but from the perspective of running it as a business. So joining me are UC Low, who is the owner and curator of Artemis Art, as well as Jafar Ismail, advisor and co-founder of Fergana Art. How are you both doing today?
Good, thank you.
Yeah, I'm good, Sharmila, thanks. Thanks for having us here.
So perhaps the natural starting point, to begin this conversation would be to get a sense of your each of your galleries. Would you classify yourself as a small or a micro enterprise?
Yeah. I think Artemis Art will fall under the micro category. We are really tiny. We don't really have permanent staff. So obviously everybody know Jamal and I, we run the business. I think, yeah, that's the category we should be under.
Mm-hmm. And what about Fergana?
Well, Fergana is very small. But we started we're an accidental gallery. We started to do, it's almost like an asset management company to manage the artistic asset or the art archives of posthumous artists, because my friend, I started accidentally because a friend of mine, an artist friend of mine, died, passed away, and I started to manage his asset. So in terms whether I'm small or micro, is that I'm small, although some of the projects I do, I think, are quite expensive, and we do projects for institutions like the National Art Gallery, Balai Seni Negara, once in a while.
Mm. And that's quite common for an art gallery in Malaysia, isn't it? That in a strictly business definition, you might be micro or small, but you could potentially be working on projects that could perhaps extend far beyond that.
Yeah, I think UC and me, Fergana and Artemis, we are not short of ambition. Like everybody wants to be big and large and do great things for ourselves and for the business.
For the artists, yeah.
So tell me a little bit about each of your individual journeys to setting up your art galleries. Maybe UC, we can start with Artemis first.
Okay. We started in late November of 2011. I think Jamal and I, we started we didn't really think much about what's the focus or direction. We just jump in without knowing even the market. And we remember the few days, a couple of times the big collectors came in and we didn't even know who they are. It took us a while to realize that we need to have a focus. We need to know what exactly we are trying to do here. So we kind of have to change our plans from what we initially started thinking that we would help to create. If we buy art, I'm sure lots of people out there buy art, and not realizing that may not be true because there are specific groups of people that we don't even know. So over the years now, by November this year, we'll be 8 years old. I hope we kind of find our focus by now. So we are quite clear that we are promoting young and emerging Southeast Asian artists. We rely a lot on art fairs simply because we realize that we can't be depending on only the domestic market. And the other reason is that to give the artists that we represent a greater collector base by exposing them to new markets all the time. So that's the main focus for us right now.
And what about you, Jafar?
Yeah, for me, when I started, like I said, just maybe because we don't really know. We never really intend to be to have a transactional model of the art business in the gallery sense of the word. So we started actually to manage just the asset of a friend of mine, and Ismail Hashim, photographer, and he died in a tragic accident. So we decided to look at his asset and manage it, and that's when I put the head of my previous career as an investment banker and a deal maker. So and eventually I knew that at the end of the day, it must have some kind of transactional model. And we started to have a look at, the supply side, the artists, and also the demand side, the collectors. And I think the art business, the gallery business, is really an intermediary business, somewhere sitting in between. But it's a very difficult business. You're going to have the supply side that is almost unlimited. you have how many art schools in this country? ITM has got a lot of art schools. There's MIA, there's design and whatnot. And then there is the demand side, which is the people who are going to buy. And that demand side is actually limited demand side, the collector base, people who collect art for art's sake, you know. Because most people, before they become collectors, they started to buy art actually as a decorator. They want to decorate their house, their apartment, you know, buy a gift for their girlfriend or their wife or something like that, or, their, you know, whoever. And then they become a buyer of art. You know. And eventually, when they think they know a lot about art, then they become a collector. Mm. And that universe of collector as a universe of demand side universe is very small. You know, and in fact, it's probably shrinking. Although I think that my view is that you have to, I mean, you see, and we have to be optimistic, I'm sure. Mm. While the supply side increased because of many art schools, the GDP of the country grows up. So obviously, I think the demand side will also expand. But it'll expand at a lower base, you know, because in this business, there are not many people who can write a check of 100,000 ringgit to buy a painting. Mm. It's probably about, I don't know, 100 maybe, even less probably. And that's always a dilemma of this business, even, you know.
And when was Fergana founded?
We started maybe 2013,
you know. And do you have, UC was saying that their focus is Southeast Asian artists, mm. emerging Southeast Asian mm. artists. Does Fergana have a particular focus?
No, I just do, I just have a domestic focus. I just do Malaysian artists. And then I'm just trying to find my feet on the ground. But it's been 6 years now, you know, mm-hmm. or a bit more than 6 years, yeah. So I should get wet by now. But
So yeah. that raises an interesting question. Mm. And perhaps you know, the answer might be something that evolves. Mm. But did you start off with a specific aim or a goal for your gallery? And, you know, is there a certain identity that you're building?
I don't know. Maybe UC knows that. I mean,
not when we first started off, yeah? Like I said, we didn't know nothing about even the Malaysian art scene. Not being disrespectful, but we actually did start knowing more about Indonesian artists because we were making trips to Yogyakarta quite a fair bit. When we first bought art, I don't think we are collectors. We bought art that we like because we wanted to help them because we saw the struggling, really, really poor artists. I always feel that you haven't seen how poor they are until you've seen the boys and girls in Yogyakarta. So we went there to buy purely to support the young and struggling artists. We don't care whether they will become famous or full-time and all that. We just wanted to be able to help them along the journey. Yeah, and we did, yeah, for a few years until we decided that maybe we should have a gallery and we can help them more, yeah, when we have that. And then only we started looking at the Malaysian artists and then we realized that we know so little, yeah. We really know very, very little. So we had to start learning at a very fast pace, hoping to catch up, yeah.
You know, for me, it's very clear because I started, I collected art when, you know, in the late 70s and whatnot, and continued to buy bits and pieces. I stopped collecting maybe in about year 2000. I think the last piece of painting that I bought is probably 1998, 1999 maybe. But first is just to do it for my friends. And then my friends who are artists, and generally they're about my age group or even older than me. You know? And then I have a particularly focus on what they call modernists, the first generation, second generation, third generation modernists. So I'm almost, you know, Fergana art, you know, is unknown to the younger artists today. Even today, I think some of them are fearful of, you know, they don't give a damn what I do. But anyway, I just do for the old artists, for the senior artists. And that's, I think, that's the niche market for me. And then every couple of years or every year or so, I will try and either produce or curate a show at the National Art Gallery. You know, it's not for anything else, but it's also some interesting projects that I wanted to do. And that's how I started. So I don't do that many exhibitions, actually. Probably at the most, I think 2015 and 2016, I did manage to cross something like 6 exhibitions a year. And now it's only like 2, 3 maybe, maybe 3. This year, I have done 0.
So speaking of the gallery as a business, right? What is the primary source of revenue?
Well, I don't know. The source of revenue is actually transactional intermediation revenue.
So to put it simply, the selling of the artworks.
Yeah, the selling of the artwork, and then you have to nurture some of the artists so that they've got some kind of value or price to it.
So then do you also function as, so you take commissions when you connect artists towards potential sources of income?
That's basically it.
But it kind of sounds too transactional, because when, in our case, we nurture the younger artists, so we don't just sell because, I mean, it's kind of relatively low prices as compared to what Fergana has, because they are a lot more matured and established artists. So for the younger artists, you need to nurture in order to help them to have a career path because these are full-time artists. The trust they put in us, we have to ensure that they don't just sell, but also to progress as an artist. Yeah.
And so as a gallery, then, what would be your priority? Is it to maximize revenue or to maximize profile, to maximize visibility?
I don't know. It's very difficult to say. I mean, the idea is that you always wanted to do a business or enterprise so that you can be profitable and sustainable and give you a decent profit and develop an income of it. The art business is very difficult, especially in Malaysia, It's very difficult because we do not... The country, I mean, it's not like... There's nothing wrong with the country, but... The idea of collecting objects, whether an object and then putting a price to it, get a value for it, it's not something that's very common, if you look from the corporate sector in Indonesia, for example, people value art a lot more, and artists were participated in the national narrative, nation building, and whatnot. I mean, you normally read about Filipino artists or Filipino poets and writers and whatnot, similarly in Indonesia, who were instrumental, in germinating the idea of a revolution for independence and things like that. So the artists and artisans have got, society gives them a bit more respect and a bit more time for them. So the objects that they made becomes collectible. So it's a cultural thing. In Malaysia, it's not so easy. But eventually, I think, with the GDP that's increased by 10, 15 times or whatever, surely people will buy something because people will see that there's an idea about purchasing history. And people always say history is priceless, but I've never sold a painting more than $10 million. So how can I say it's priceless? So it's a bit of a fantasy for the dealer that they do cut a deal for $10 million, a $10 million painting, and because history is priceless. But no, I don't know. I think it's a difficult business, but it's a business that is driven mainly, as you said, by passion, for the right or for the wrong reason. Yeah.
And you see, what about you? When it comes down to the running of the gallery, do you prioritize revenue or do you prioritize visibility?
I hope whatever we are doing today for the last 7 years have taken into consideration all the things that you've mentioned. So like what Jaffa has highlighted a couple of times, I think running a gallery is most probably one of the most difficult business to run. And a lot come into this business for their love for arts in the first place. I always tell friends that if you have lots of money, go do some other business. Don't do art gallery if you don't love arts in the first place. Because it's painful, yeah? And my whole life in corporate was in sales. I was top sales lady in many fields. But here is something that you can't even do a forecast, yeah? In sales, we always talk about numbers. You make 10 calls, maybe you get one sales out of it. But in the gallery, you can't. You just can't. So we hope that whatever that we are doing has able to reach all these reasons at the same time. So you have to do multiple things, yeah, in order to build profile, not just for gallery. You need to build profile for the artists that you represent and hope that you really, really hope and cross your fingers that they will stay with you long enough, yeah, for you to make some good money out of them when they become famous. And at the same time, you need to think that you have to be profitable and then sustainable after some time, yeah? Mm.
So we do need to go for a quick break. But before we do, I'm curious to just quickly hear from both of you. Would you consider your businesses sustainable thus far?
Mine, it's very difficult to say whether it's sustainable, you know, but I'll just keep going on it. Maybe over time we'll find an interesting model, the model that can actually work, given what the market is and given what, you know, the state of the country and whatnot.
And Yusi, would you say that in the 8 years since you've started, that Artemis Art has become sustainable?
I think we are still looking for the right formula. I would say as long as we are passionate about it, as long as I still have money and I still have the strength to do it, I will continue. And if the day comes that I feel like I can't carry on anymore, then that's the day I call it quit.
Well, we do need to take a break, but we will hear more from Yusi Low, who is the owner and curator of Artemis Art, as well as Jafar Ismail, advisor and co-founder of Fergana Art. It is World Micro, Small and Medium-Sized Enterprises Day, and we are talking about the business aspect of running an art gallery. We'll be back after a short break. You're listening to Front Row on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Front Row on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Sharmila Ganesan. We are celebrating World Micro, Small and Medium-Sized Enterprises Day here on BFM today. And so we're speaking to two local art gallery owners about the business of running an art gallery. So with me are Yusi Low, who is the owner and curator of Artemis Art, as well as Jafar Ismail, who is the advisor and co-founder of Fergana Art. Mm-hmm. So before the break, you know, we were speaking a little bit, particularly you, Jafar, you touched on this supply and demand of the art market. But there's also that segment in between where it's the people who go to art galleries, the people who enjoy art and who love art, but they're not necessarily the ones who are buying the art. So you have two fairly different segments that you're appealing to, which is the average visitor, and then you have the collectors. So how do you balance these considerations when you look at what you do as a business?
I think the key thing is actually the duty almost of the galleries, the promoter, the producers, the curator, to make sure that the universe of people who appreciate art, whether they collect or they come and view and have a look, expands, you know, on a daily basis, if not more and more. And then, I mean, basically, it's a function of how do you actually do it. And then, if you look at Malaysia, there's obviously the national institutions, the National Art Gallery, the Petronas Gallery, the Gallery for Bank Negara Gallery. And then the academic institution, or UITM or MIA, they have their own little galleries. But then there's commercial gallery like UC, mine, and then Sagaris and whatnot. But interesting thing is the internet, because you can see the potential of the internet that can disrupt this whole gallery model and let the artists have greater access to the various online platforms and whatnot. I'm not sure. I've seen, if you see in the market, you can see quite a bit that's going on now. People are setting up online platforms, trading platforms. Mm-hmm. Artists are marketing themselves directly. And that's very good, actually. But the idea of, you know, can the fine arts or can the art market, can collectibles art, whether it's fine or not or whatever, can that be disrupted? And I think fundamentally it can, because there are no amount of gallery and wall space in the whole country can actually fill up, in KL, for example, can actually fill up the amount of artwork or whatever, graphic works or whatever, that's been produced by all the artists in the country. So the internet actually presents a real possibility of disruption. And I think the role of, you know, the gallery-based model, will have to start thinking about it quite seriously, and how to actually deal with this disruption. And I think it's positive for the economy and positive for the artists, because they can have direct connection and, you know, interaction with the so-called collectors or the buyers of what they produce.
I don't know. It is obviously something that we cannot ignore. Yeah. Mm. And also the trend of collectors who loves to buy in an art fair, because I think they can, you know, buying in a gallery is not as fun as, let's say, going to Hong Kong or Singapore or somewhere and buy art, where you see 200 galleries all at the same place and you treat it as a little holiday. I think that is definitely the trend, and gallery have to consider the various way of selling methods and not just based on doing an exhibition and hoping the collector would come and buy. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what role does marketing play in the work that you do?
Actually, everything. Marketing is so key, but still the gallery has got to be opened up to, you know, there's a lot of things that people do now. You know, I started, have a gallery in Penang, have a project in Penang, and then I decided to shut it down and I become a pop-up, you know, doing exhibitions at whatever venue I can find on. And now I look at the online business. The online business is very interesting and I think people should look at it more. I mean, the artists, I think, should pay particular attention to it in order to market their own product. And marketing is almost the whole thing. Mm. I mean, it is not nice, it's not cultured, quote-unquote, to say that marketing is everything there is to it, but potentially it is. But then, on the other hand, if you don't have a good product, you know, what is there to market? You know, so the challenge is actually for the artists to craft something or to do something that is always contextually is relevant. And also, you know, the content also has got to be quite interesting in order to engage with the audience. So the gallery as an intermediary, you know, is while you're curating a show. So I'm not even sure whether a curated art show is relevant anymore. You know, so let's see how.
And you see what your thoughts on what are your thoughts on marketing when it comes to running an art gallery?
I think you can't do like a conventional marketing plan where you want to sell a phone or you have an object, a specific product to sell, because, I mean, you can't even tell, especially when we go to a new market, you don't even know what kind of arts that people like and you don't even know who walks in through the door, yeah? So I think it's really so difficult that you just sometimes, I go with my gut feel that I think this kind of genre of works will work in this art fair. And every time the gallery takes the risk to say that, okay, I'm going to venture into this new market, I would I think this few kind of genre of works would work in that fair, then you just take the risk and you just go. That's how I do it.
It's an unregulated industry.
Yes.
And that's the fantastic thing about it. I think it's the only one of the very few industry in the world or business in the world that is unregulated, where, you know, you don't know what the value of art is. It's arbitrary, right?
Yeah.
The pricing is arbitrary. The value is abstract value, you know. Who knows, you know, what the value. So the unregulated feature of the so-called enterprise allow many different kind of things to happen, you know. You can actually launder money, you know, for it. And then you can actually buy something and ascribe a particular value to it, and hence it become like a trophy. So it's a business for people like, you know, who wants to hunt for trophies, also that. And then a business where you can actually buy something, put on the wall, that's totally against your own very persona. So, you know, it's like, and then there's other collectors who I've met through the years, who buy art that they wanted. They are not adventurous because they are working in a bank or something. So they want to live the adventurous life through the works of the artists that they collect. So it's like, you know, so these are very interesting. So because of that, because of the nature of the business and the arbitrary, the abstract business, the nature of the business, the art business will always continue. Mm. You know, so it's a question of whether you actually want to do it or not. But in the world, if you look at, I think, Germany or England or Australia or wherever, most of the art gallery owners are actually owned by financial people. So the capitalist nature.
Well, it's $64 billion market worldwide, isn't it? Well, I think that was the last value.
Well, you know, like Sotheby's got taken private for $3.7 billion last week. You know, who knows, right? You know, why it was taken private, I'm not sure. Mm. But Sotheby's hasn't really made a lot of money for a long time, you know, even though it was a listed company. But there is a value ascribed to it. You know?
So, you see, I'm curious, what is a model that works for you when it comes to selling art in terms of pricing? How do you ascribe a value to something that to many people seems like you can't put a value on or is difficult to put a value on?
It is difficult, but you still have to put a value on it. So you would try to make the price reasonable based on the year of experience. They have done previous shows. And then you kind of pull a value to say that I think this is good art and I think it should be able to fetch the whatever price range. And then you work from that benchmark and then you hope you are right. Yeah, sometimes you do get wrong. Sometimes you do price it too low. Sometimes you do price it too high. But the conversation with the artist is important. Yeah, because we promote very, very young artists. Yeah, so they also depend on us for the guidelines and all that. So I hope that we have done it right with them and in agreement and why we put certain price. So I think that is a discussion and agreement, a consent from the artist that, okay, this is an agreeable price and that's how we should market it. Yeah.
And how do you work, Jaffa, when it comes to pricing your art?
I don't know. It has to be good for a start. You know, the art has got to be good, I think. But pricing is a function of so many different things, you know. One of the, aside from the art, is something that's really interesting to look at. I think there's content, there's context. And then the other thing that's really funny is that, you know, the artist and the institution, the collecting institution like the National Art Gallery or whatever museum, have always got this very tensional relationship between the artist and the validation and the institution. The institution is supposed to give them validation, and once they're collected by the National Gallery, the institution, then the value of they can actually say that they have made it and they can sell at a certain dollar value and whatnot. And then, but on the other hand, they don't want to be controlled by the institution. So these kind of dynamics is what probably make it very interesting. And eventually, at the end of the day, the market will pay what the market can bear. For example, you look at it like Malaysian art, you know, maybe in the private market, there's the transactions that happen, like more than 1 million or 2 million or whatever there is. But in Indonesia, or in the Philippines or in China, an equivalent peer artist of that particular Malaysian artist will probably be priced like 10 times more or 5 times more. Mm-hmm. But that is actually the capitalistic nature of art, where as the economy grows up, as there are more, the country, the economy produce or germinate more billionaires, then obviously they will dominate the discourse of cultural and fine arts. You know, they price it up. So economic influence equals cultural domination. There's no argument about that. So actually, it's very funny. The Malaysian artists may be very good, may be very relevant, but their pricing, the value that the domestic market will pay is probably a fraction of their peer in Indonesia or their peer in the Philippines, who will pay 5 times more. Simply because Indonesia has got more billionaires, Philippines got more billionaires, Hong Kong, China, blah, blah, blah. You know, so it's almost a function of the economy.
So it strikes me then, I mean, and this is usually an art show, we don't talk this much about the business.
Yeah.
Galleries, people like yourselves who work with visual arts, your job is not just a business though. It's also about adding to a country's cultural narrative. I mean, I don't know, maybe I'm being too idealistic. Do you see your job as being more than just selling art? Do you see it as serving a larger purpose?
Mine?
Well, for either of you, it might be different.
I've described myself as an agitator, you know, because for me, if you want to agitate on anything, on any issue, I mean, that's one of the reasons why Fergana was founded, is that if you want to, art and culture is a very low hurdle, you know. There's a low hurdle for you to become an agitator. And it's a very low-cost entry. You don't have to have millions of dollars to actually use the platform of art and culture and literature to actually agitate and push a certain particular viewpoint that hopefully will enhance or add value to the so-called national narrative that's dear to you, right? But that's how it is. It's very cheap, you know. I mean, if you look at even compared to the artists, you know. I mean, I have produced 2 shows, curated and produced 2 shows at the National Art Gallery. I'm producing another one this year, you know. And artists will have to have almost 10 or 15 years of experience to be able to have a show at the National Art Gallery. And that is quite shameful to say that someone like me can actually go and produce a show at the National Art Gallery, because the threshold is very low. in this, so far in Malaysia. You know, maybe in other countries, very difficult. You have to have a PhD or a Master's of Fine Arts to actually think that you are competent enough, you're qualified enough to walk into the halls of the National Art Gallery, you know, of that particular country and produce and curate a show. I'm not saying that the National Art Gallery do not value with the project that I'm doing, but because of the situation of the country now, it's very low threshold. You can write 2 books, huh, and people will think that you're a fantastic writer in this country. You produce 1 movie, you directed 1 movie, they think you're a fantastic filmmaker. But in real terms, you are a reflection of the society that you live in. If the society is shallow, the society is not deep enough, or the society is not populated enough by thinkers, that's what you get. So I think my role is, for Ghana, it's quite funny because I will lose clients for it. It is important to be in the art business, in the cultural business, because you can agitate. And the little bit of agitation that you do possibly can actually improve society a little bit. Mm. You know, like all artists, they can't change the world. You can't change the world. Art cannot change the world, but art can only give you a little bit of, offer a window for perhaps something can be done a little bit better. That's about all, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think the gallery function that way, intuitively, you know, subconsciously, that's what we all at. I mean, I don't see any galleries in the country that's purely commercial and just doing it for the money. If they do it for real for the money, they're in the wrong business.
You see, what about you? Do you serve a larger purpose?
I suppose, I hope so, by bringing the young artists' works to various parts of the world, by giving them that opportunity for a bigger audience to their work. I hope that we are responsible for that, I think. So I hope that I have done that well. Yeah, we always tell them that that's the exposure that they need. Besides being an artist, that you need to be physically like traveling from where they are instead of just sitting in their studio and paint. They need to go out. So does the artwork. Yeah. So by exposing the artworks in the various countries that we go to, I hope we've done that well for them. Yeah.
Mm. And we've mentioned the artists a lot, and obviously that is the sort of core source of the work you do. What is your relationship with the artists that you work with or that you represent?
For me, I have a quite a strange relationship. I'm a very ambivalent relationship between me and the artists, you know. And then sometimes I think they're doing very good work. Sometimes I think they're not doing very good work. But it's quite difficult to ambivalent. The worst thing for a gallery, I think, for me anyway, is to be a great fan of the artist. And then you probably lose all kinds of objectivity totally, you know. And then on the other hand, is that if you're not a fan of the artist, why do you want to show something that you don't like? You know? So, but at the end, then you start measuring, is the artist, is the content good? Is it relevant to society? Or is he painting, he's doing work for himself? Or is he reflecting the other people outside of his universe? And is the artist, you know, spend all his life, you know, gazing at his own navel or her own navel? So, I mean, you look at it. But at the end of the day, I mean, a good artist where the content is of quality or good and context is very relevant. Like I always say, you know, I've always said to all my artists, you know, content is always the king. And context is always the queen. You know? So if you don't have any of that, you know, I'm not going to show you.
Oh, my artists are young. I always teased Jafar that he always showed dead artists' works.
No, I do not.
Actually, last time.
Totally non-commercial.
We always laugh about that. Well, when you have young artists, to me, I prefer to know them very well. Yeah, I can't represent an artist like taking his work to Hong Kong and anywhere and not really been to his studio, haven't met him in person, doesn't know how he lives as a person or as an artist. So yeah, we take it personal in that sense that I would like to personally know them very, very well. That's how we approach that.
It's interesting because I don't visit artist studio. I hardly ever visit them. In fact, I find it very difficult for me. Maybe it's my age. I'm 63 years old, right? I find that maybe because I've known artists, and I also did courses on fine arts a long time ago. But the artist space, the studio is a private space. I find it very difficult to enter that because I will then I will then impose my views. I mean, I can't help it. I will impose my views. I will expound what I think. So I think I better stay away and just let them produce what they do. Mm. And then they come and show me, have a cup of tea, coffee. That's a way. That's a relationship. So the distance they have to be managed between the artist and the curator or the galleries, you know, it has to be far enough as not to succumb to the fatal embrace. That's how it is. And also that's the same, the fatal embrace, the distance also got to be managed between the artist and the collector. They have to manage that distance because if one goes onto the other, once they overlap, you know, there's the end of the collector because the collector then will become a fan. Then the artist then will actually do the paint or do the work only for the collector because in the back of his head, he knows he can sell that piece of art.
Mm.
You know, so that's the fatal embrace is always something that the distance has got to be managed carefully.
Mm. So speaking of managing, UC, I'm interested to hear, in terms of putting on shows or exhibitions, you know, when it comes to selecting the themes or selecting the ideas that you might want to do, how much does the business side of it come into effect? Do you think about, well, this will be something that will sell or not sell? Do you think about this is something that would market well? Or is it purely driven by the artistic side of things?
To be fair, I really haven't thought much about how much I would make from each of the show. So not a very good businesswoman in that sense. Yeah. We have a dream that we would like the Artemis Art to be the platform for young artists to come on board. And one day when we are old enough and still alive and someone out there became very famous and they would... when they were interviewed and they said that, well, I started my career with Artemis Art. So I think that would be my dream, yeah. So we don't really do a lot of calculating of the money and all that, you know. Like I just said earlier on, you can't even forecast because you think sometimes you think that, oh, this is good art, I think it would sell. And it may not. And the ones that you think maybe is not acceptable in the market, but it would be selling like hotcakes. So you really, really don't know. In that sense, that's how I feel over the last few years of experience now.
Well, I mean, the business element has to be looked at, you know. But generally, I don't do many commercial shows. So I've always decided to do shows that what comes to my head and what I try to pursue. And because of that, most of my shows hardly ever sell. They're not many. I mean, it's very rare to have a sellout show in any of my exhibition. I think I did, in 2017, I did... you know, a show called Boundaries of Disbeliefs, you know, which is exploring religion and faith, you know. And I had, and that was a very difficult show, but fortunately I managed I did the show, organized the show during the period of the Merdeka month, you know. So thanks to Publica, they actually paid it. They made it part of their festival. Little do they know, the show, a key speaker of the show was Kasim Ahmad, the late Kasim Ahmad, who came and talked about faith, talk about the role of religion in the federal constitution, and then we got into a lot of trouble for that because I think we've got almost 47 NGOs or lawyers, you know, start sending letters to me. That show, I think I didn't sell any work. I can't remember selling anything. Maybe one or two, I can't remember. And then I've always do shows like that. And before the election, I did a show called Rupa Rupanya, which is basically asking the testing the artist and also to induce in kind of, you know, is this what politics is all about? Is this what they are showing? And now I think I'm not sure I'm going to do something this year. Probably this year, probably be a show about expectation, you know, about disappointment or something like that. But you know, I'll do a show again. But totally non-commercial show at the National Gallery, a posthumous show for Ismail Zain, the late Ismail Zain. And then it's totally a show about reassessment of his work that he did This is totally non-commercial. You're never going to sell anything.
So you guys have actually said several times, you might not sell anything. This is not really about the money and so on, right? Mm. I have one question, I think, which would be an interesting note to end on, which is, what is the potential or the future for art galleries in the Malaysian market? Do you see potential? Is there, do you see a light, that keeps you going?
Of course, of course. I mean, I don't see the potential so much of the art gallery business, because the relationship, the gallery model is going to be tested. It's being tested right now, whether the artists will be loyal and work with the gallery system, or whether the institution and the collectors will buy through the gallery system. So the intermediation role of the gallery in the intermediary role is like everything else, like stock broking, equity broking, they're all being tested. People just do things directly now. Uber, hotel business, B&B, the intermediary is gone, But the art will survive and art will expand. Art per se will expand because even more so, I think the creative industry will even expand now, will be because it's one thing that artificial intelligence cannot do. Artificial intelligence cannot imagine. So because of that, the creative industry, which actually fueled the code writing for software, gaming and whatnot, they will grow. So in that sense, I have a lot of positive vibes about the arts business, and which is why I've always thought that Malaysia as a country and the politicians should pay more attention to creativity, because there's one thing that artificial intelligence cannot do. I think this is where the country, I think, have to me, why I'm in this business also, because I believe the arts and the creativity is going to be the linchpin, if not the foundation of this fourth industrial revolution that people are talking about. So I think BFM, you support more, and people like me, crazy people like me, should be. Yeah.
And you see, what about you? What potential do you see in the local gallery field?
Tough question, but I'm sure it's positive. If not, I would have given up a long time ago. Like what Jafar said, the system right now is being really tested, not just here, but all over the world. So we need, as galleries, we also need to be very creative in not just selling transactionally, but also in promoting them maybe to a next level, to see how are we able to bring these younger artists to a different platform that maybe just expanding their market and not just a domestic market, to give it a greater demand for their works. And then the business will be sustainable in that sense.
Well, thank you very much for coming on and talking about this with me.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting
Thanks,
us.
Thanks, Jamila, for having me here.
I've been speaking to UC Low, owner and curator of Artemis Art, and Jafar Ismail, advisor and co-founder of Fergana Art. In conjunction with World Micro, Small and Medium-Sized Enterprises Day today, we've been speaking about the business aspect of running an art gallery. If you've missed any part of this interview or any previous Front Row segments, you can download the podcasts on bfm.my, on our BFM app, and also on Spotify. You've been listening to Front Row on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.